I have received in terms of section 96, subsection 1 of the Constitution of Zimbabwe, a letter from the President, State House, Harare, Zimbabwe, 31st November 2017. The Honourable Jacob Mondenga, notice of resignation.
Capital 263.
Welcome to Politics and Beyond on Capital 263. My name is Christopher Farai Charamba.
My name is Upenyu Makoni Matenga.
And my name is Tawanda Henry Beattie. And yeah, welcome to the best political podcast in the new Zimbabwe. And if you don't think we are, then you should give us a coup or something.
Hey, one a year is enough, don't you think?
No, you get a coup. You get a coup.
Everyone gets a coup.
But this is the Museveni changed his army commander.
He actually, I met some people from Uganda and they were telling me that he actually like promoted some of the junior officers and changed a bit of the leadership around. He's not trying to have anything that's happening in Zimbabwe or that happened in Zimbabwe happen to him. So yeah, interesting times. People are saying that ZDF should actually outsource their model, and I think it's a model that's actually going to be studied by quite a lot of conflict and resolution students or military studies on how to have a coup that's not a coup.
Yeah, pane mathesis akamirwa
ipapo. Obo. Yeah, so in a new Zimbabwe, today is the 26th of November. We're recording. We actually haven't recorded in a while because the way things were happening, it would have been quite futile to try and record every single day. So up today, well, we're just going to go through a couple of the highlights from what happened, specifically, Mugabe's resignation speech, and then going into Mnangagwa's speeches, the one at ZANU-PF and the one at the inauguration, talk about Chombo and Chipanga, who were in court yesterday, and I don't know, what else is there?
Yeah, I think that's pretty it. Maybe we can have a look at online attitudes to President Mnangagwa's
new...
Mnangagwa. What?
Oh, well done. What? You've been practicing.
What?
Oh.
What?
To anyone who's on the group,
get out of here.
Give him a static ovation.
What?
Yeah. No. Yeah. You got it right the second time. Practice hard.
Oh, it was the line was breaking me. Anyway, his presidency and maybe the hope, optimism, or lack thereof in certain sectors of both the online and the actual in-person words, just maybe people you've spoken to. And I think we'll keep it short and sweet because it's a bit thick, the content we have to get through.
Yep. So, Mugabe resigned. I don't know about you guys, but on the Sunday when that whole speech was supposed to go down, and I wrote about this a bit, it was so tense, and I was waiting for a long time. I even watched, shout out to Madame Boss, because she had the best live feed of that situation of ZBC, so ZBC Online wasn't covering like until the news started at 8 p.m., but like from 7 p.m. I was watching on Madame Boss, and her family were lit. But it was so tense. waiting for it, and then he comes on and he says absolutely nothing.
Sunday sun.
That's not true. That's well, not true. He said a lot with his speech. He said, I acknowledge that there were problems. At least this is what I heard. I acknowledge that there were problems. The coup was necessary. Sorry, the not a coup was necessary. And we're going to work it out. And then he said those words that everybody was reading from shock. I will preside over the December Congress. And then he said, Asante Sana.
When I say...
Even in it's Nibasa.
Even in it, Nibasa. When I say...
Oh, yes, yes.
When I say he said nothing, we were all expecting I resign. I mean, he did definitely speak a lot on various things. But there was no resignation. And for me, that was a shocker. Like, I wasn't I'd actually expected that he'd just give up. But in hindsight, I understand. I mean, if the plan was always to resign, you wouldn't want your last speech, because that would have been played over and over and over again. And that's the one thing that people... It would have been immortalized. And I don't think... For him, he'd have wanted that to come out, and you know, that be the moment. That speech can be played again, but it becomes secondary to the actual advocate Mudenda reading out the resignation. You know, the Iweneni Tinebasa, the Asante Sana will always be remembered, but it's not remembered for being his resignation speech. So in hindsight, I kind of get it.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's going to be said a lot about Mugabe, and it worries me. In hindsight, I understand it. But the guy came out, he gave a prepared speech. You know, I don't know if you... I don't even think he was trying to save his legacy. He was, my understanding of the behind the scenes happenings at the moment is that he was still obstinate at that time, and the negotiations weren't finalized or complete. So I think at that time he didn't intend to resign. He wasn't saying that speech for posterity. He was saying that speech to ensure that, you know, he's there for Congress.
No, I'm actually reliably informed that there were multiple versions of the speech, or there were a couple of versions of the speech that he was supposed to give on that day. And it really came down to sort of last minute decisions on which one it was that he was going to go with. But he
was himself, did anyone so, include a resignation?
There was one that included a resignation, yes. But it was him and a couple of advisors that went with that speech that he actually ended up giving.
Okay. And, I will take your reliable information, because...
no, but of course...
Because Blood George's book on Robert Mugabe's presidency is the only book that I ever want to read on Mugabe. Anyone right now out there in academia, if you're planning on writing a Mugabe book, please take a seat. Stop what you're doing right now.
But I hope
because
you know,
the George Sharamba book is the only book that we want.
But I hope you know there will be propaganda in it. I mean, there will definitely be propaganda in it, and we'll get into ED speech. But on Mugabe said we can wrap up because. You know, that's him gone.
But can we have a moment of silence, though, guys?
Because no,
for real, it's been 37 years. Like
what?
It or not, Mugabe has shaped the way our generation will forever look at where we came from, who we are, and where we're going, and that really deserves because. For what? Think about it. Everything that you are has actually essentially been shaped by one person. And that deserves him. Even if you don't like Mugabe, you don't have to like his politics or what he did, but it does deserve a moment of silence. I think that was it. It's
that was that was long enough.
Where were you guys when you first heard or watched African Dende read the resignation letter?
Oh, so where was I?
I was in a media and democracy seminar, and literally towards the end of the seminar, people were asking me about what was going on back home, and I got messages. Someone sent me a message, and they were like, "Ayenda," and I was like, "Who?" Because at that point, after Sunday, I'd disengaged. Like, I was, because it took up so much of my time the week before. So after Sunday, I was like, I'm just going to wait for official updates. I'm not going to, you know, follow. And I was like, who? And they were like, Mugabe. And then I literally, my phone was blowing up. The group chat was on fire. In every other group chat, people from home sending me messages. And I went to Twitter, and then I started seeing the footage of, you know, people literally celebrating in the streets. And yeah, that was kind of crazy.
That was insane. I was at work, working, doing work things. It was nothing sexy.
Did you continue to work?
Yes, I did. I think I was in the middle of editing a book, actually. And yeah, it's, you know, I was like, oh, okay, I'll deal with it later. I will say, though, that I then celebrated that whole evening, and I am not proud of myself, because the next morning, no, because tayarangurakaponja, like, it's a whole thing, guys.
Wow.
It was a whole thing.
You had a full experience.
Exactly, I had the total experience.
Yeah.
So, yeah, shout out to the people I was drinking with. You guys are strong.
No, I got a call from my sister, from Sissy Franzi, our helper's phone. She's been with us, like, she's been my second mother. And my sister Zoe called me and was like, hey, you know, Peter was accident. Do you hear that Bob's dip, bruh? It was 3 a.m. And I was like, Tej, what are you talking about? And then, yeah, in a moment of weakness, watched the WhatsApp message circling around, and had shed a few tears, and then woke up and went to work like I know, like our new president encouraged us to do, Kuti.
Mm-hmm.
We should work hard. Talking about our new president. His two speeches.
Yeah, so he flew back on Thursday, Friday? He was inaugurated Thursday. On Friday, so he flew back on Wednesday.
On Wednesday.
Was it Wednesday, not Thursday?
It was Wednesday, because it was the day between. I think it was, yeah. Uh-huh. So he flew back on Wednesday, and he gave his first speech at ZANU-PF headquarters. You know, online commentary is something. I saw a lot of people criticizing the fact that it was there, and, you know, before anything had happened, it was, oh, this is more of the same. But I feel it was necessary for him to go and say the things that he said there, or address those people first. I mean, he spoke about the whole not a coup. He spoke about, you know, the attempt on his life, which is something he couldn't have said at the inauguration speech, and the whole process. What else did he mention there that was quite significant? He did start to speak about working together, and you know, the voice of the people is the voice of God, which is his new catchphrase.
It's a hell of a statement, man.
We're not going anywhere good.
It's a hell of a statement.
It most certainly is. He had a couple of things that he mentioned there, but I think that speech was really to, aside from thanking ZANU-PF for, you know, putting him in the position of power, also just address some of the things that had happened, why he left, and clear that part up, because I think as his second speech then reflected, he's moving on to the Zimbabwe project, if we can call it that, or the more important business. And I thought that was just finalizing that ZANU-PF chapter. I don't know about you guys, what you thought.
You know, that I wasn't moved, to be honest, by the speech. It was another speech. To be fair, I do sympathize and I do understand.
The first one.
Yeah, the first one.
Okay.
It wasn't. No, I was far more impressed by the inauguration speech.
Okay. Yeah.
But it. Yes, you're right. It was a form of closing chapters and acknowledging, you know, what had happened before. Can we talk about Kunguvukura though, and the people? That particular comment.
I think we should have a whole section on the barking dogs.
No, but for me that was playing to the gallery, you know what I mean? Like, that was just him, you know, getting hyped, or getting the crowd sort of hyped, because that's literally, that clip has circulated everywhere. So it's something that people know ED for.
He understands memes.
Exactly. It's that, and it's Pasine Mandu, which people will always, you know, sort of. And I think with all the excitement that was there, it really was just for the crowd, you know, to get them a little bit sparked, and for the soundbite, you know, the comical effect of it all, if I can call it.
Yeah, because I think with that Pasine Mandu thing, he realized early on in his political career, he's not the strongest public speaker. And so I think he tends, just having had a look, he interviews quite well, from an impartial perspective. But in terms of his actual public speeches, I've noticed he speaks in almost cliches, like he speaks in sound bites. And I think it's a deliberate effort to make up for what some would call lack of charisma, but that's not him. He's not, for lack of a better comparison, he's not a Robert Mugabe, I mean. Sorry, it was a slip of the tongue.
Wow.
I'm sorry. It's the time zone. I'm still in the old Zimbabwe.
You're ahead of us, though.
Yeah.
Don't let facts get in the way of a good story. You work for the Herald, you know that's the truth.
Hey, I hope you've seen that the Herald is a new paper right now. The Herald is a new paper. There's changes happening over there, ku Herald. People are, you know, expressing themselves, I'll call it.
Very, very freely.
But, yeah, for his first speech, I wasn't surprised. I was a little disappointed. I thought, like you said, the first thing you said, I understand why people were talking about ZANU-PF headquarters. I understand the political implications of that, and I understand how beholden he was to the party. But in terms of a more inclusive locale, he could have had his first speech coming out of the airport. They could have said something out right outside the airport. He could have had it even in Africa Unity Square. He could have had it any number of public open places, almost spontaneously. Could have missed some motor, you know what I mean?
But I think that was exactly the point, not to have it, because as you rightly say, he could have had it in Africa Unity Square, which is a beautiful place to have it. Personally, I would have chosen that because the optics of that would have been brilliant. Imagine the photos.
Yeah.
But to have it in ZANU-PF, ties him very much and very strongly with the party. Because remember, I don't know if this was a conversation I had with you previously, but Mnangagwa didn't want to. He could have very easily, after having been dismissed from the party at the presidium, gone and started his own party, and with Chiwenga's backing, you know, gone on to win an election, because ZANU-PF was weakened without the security arm. So, but to have it at ZANU-PF headquarters says that, no, I'm still very much a part of ZANU-PF, and this is very much a continuation of the party, and it is, in fact, the next evolution. It's the next iteration of ZANU-PF, and we're moving into a new, hopefully a new era of the party where, you know, it's not just about looting, although Obet Mpofu there is bad for the optics, but it's now more about, okay, how can we grow the pie so that we can all, I can still steal, but there's it's not going to cripple the country when I do it. Yeah, you know what I mean?
I agree. That's why I said I wasn't surprised, little disappointed. Of course, you want, from where I'm sitting, you want a Hollywood-esque homecoming, but
don't worry, we'll put it in the movie. It'll be in the movie.
but this was very much as much as it had national implications, we mustn't forget that this was very much a ZANU-PF project in what it was. And it, you know, João came out and said, "Wano akaitiswa," which I found very funny because he looked like he was speaking from a cupboard.
I'm gonna Oh,
it's the same for the sound,
Shots fired.
But to be fair, it. It really was, you know, there was a strong ZANU-PF element to what happened. And that cannot be discounted. And I thought, you know, well, I get people's disappointment. But I also think that at that stage, it wasn't enough to judge him. Because all he was going to do was literally address in brief what had happened and deal with the fact that they'd moved against Mugabe in such a manner. And then we move on to
the inauguration.
Yeah, but so also
I'm pronouncing English words as well, so
I'm
an equal opportunity offender.
Just in terms of ZANU-PF, those are some disloyal no having your back kind of, I'm not going to swear, but you know exactly what I want to say after that. I mean, those people literally, within a matter of days, went from Gushungo Chete Tete to Mugabe Ngaende. It was savage. And the video of Mutsangwa and Paul Mangwana dancing to Kutonga Kwaro. Yeah, and the fact that SK was the one who came out and read that, you know, the guy who fired Mnangagwa or read read the order to fire him, and you had Obet Mpofu presiding over the matter. You had Chinamasa at the march saying Mugabe. I don't know if he said Pasna Mugabe, but he definitely was all up on Mugabe Ngai, and I don't know if he did that. But those guys, no, like, they can't be trusted.
No, I mean, I think
your conclusion
with President Mnangagwa there, you know, there's a narrative. Yokuti maybe was always the guy, and people could never fully express themselves. Which, you know, I can believe to some extent for those that went open bootlickers. But if Webster Shamu comes up and says Mugabe was Krimura, but Emerson is Nutella, I'll say
But you know, interestingly enough, Webster was at one of the on the Friday. He was at one of the provincial meetings that called for Mugabe to step down.
And I was he knows how to survive.
That's true. But yeah, I just found that funny. Moving on to inauguration speech.
The actual speech.
Yeah. Thoughts, guys?
On the inauguration.
Yeah.
I think it was, you know, that's the fullest I've ever seen that the stadium. And that tells you a lot about how people felt and how people were feeling. Although I still think that a lot of it is more euphoria from a significant change in the environment than it is about, you know, an actual, does that make sense? Like,
yep.
Something new happened versus something to change things for the better happened. And I think it's still settling in that we're still dealing with the same animal. But that being said, it's made my heart warm to see so many people show up for the new president, and to see so many people so happy and so excited for this, because it's the first time we've seen an inauguration, eh? To be fair, it's the first time someone's been into the presidency. Yes. When was the last time? Bob was inaugurated how many times? Well, once, and then that was it.
No, but there's always swearing in after election.
Yeah.
He always has those.
How many people went to the last one? How many people showed up for the last one? I don't even remember when it was. Do you?
I have a vague... It was sometime in August 2013.
Okay.
Yeah, I have a vague sort of...
Do you even remember what you were doing that day?
No, of course not. I mean, Robert always had swearing in ceremonies. I don't think he had inaugurations. Just from a semantics perspective,
No, he did. The 2013 one, I believe, was at the National Sports Stadium.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because they have to do the whole generals come through and inspecting the guard
and all swearing of that. Fealty.
Yeah, all of that. All of that must happen. So I think the last one was at the National Sports Stadium.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the thing is, because it's Mugabe, it's a non-event. It's just one of those, he's doing it again. I definitely agree. It was quite an interesting ceremony. Ja Prazer was there and he got people on their feet. Shout out to Mai Chiwenga, who was one of them. This whole situation, someone mentioned this, but this whole situation has redeemed Ja Prazer's album, because for me it was quite lackluster. But Kutonga Kwaro has...
Kutonga Kwaro is a hit!
It's a massive hit. But on to the speech. Thoughts, Henry?
Man, I was very impressed. The only point that I may have disagreed with him is in making a promise he cannot keep in terms of compensation for land reform. I think that we're just not in the fiscal position or economic position to even be making promises like that. And I don't also think there's the political will to do something like that. But otherwise, I was well impressed. I think, maybe if you want to go through it point by point, you can. Or I don't know if everyone has had a chance to look at it.
Let's go through it point by point.
So I'll just give a quick sort of recap of what I remember of the speech. He addressed quite a number of issues. He started with, thanking the people who've given him this responsibility. He spoke about unity. He spoke about the need to work together. He did go into compensation in terms of, he said land reform is not going to be reversed, but he spoke about compensation. He spoke about having to deal with the banking sector and the fact that, there needs to be reform. He spoke a lot about reforms in different sectors. He spoke about the banking sector. He spoke about the need for special economic zones in terms of the economy, and taking advantage of our mineral resources. He spoke about command agriculture as well, but he mentioned market economy. He spoke about it in that manner in terms of a market economy. What else is it? He spoke about civil service needing to change, and that, you know, there needs reform in the civil service, and it's not business as usual. He spoke about going after corruption, and that needing, there needs to be change, and in that aspect. I don't know what else there was that I left out.
He spoke about FDI and creating an environment that attracts the money. He said foreign investments will be safe in our country. And I think he's, you know, he spoke about the Indigenization Act, but I might actually be referring to a different video that I saw.
Okay.
And then he made reference to the OAU and the UN, so to the multi, the supranational organizations, the UN, the OAU, and
the AU.
Know,
AU.
How sorry, I'm so sorry. What the age? You spoke about the African Union. and he.
Sorry, I apologize. Sorry. So that came from the heart. Sorry.
That was actually funny. Yeah. So he did mention another thing. So you started with the compensation. On that, first and foremost, there was no timeline. So he never said kuti mangwana chinenge taku compensator.
No. Come on.
No.
It's one of those things that no one really, I mean, besides like the majority, the people who actually were listening to that are probably the British contingent of the people that were there, but it just was so unnecessary and was such a politician thing to do.
No, but you know what? To be fair though, compensation's been something that's been on the government agenda for a while now. If not a couple of years, then quite a few months.
What I said is there's no political will for it. I didn't say hasn't been on the agenda. The fact that it's been on the agenda and nothing's happened shows there's no political will for it.
But a lot of things have been on the agenda and there's been no political will for a while. But, you know, it might be something that he's actually going to try and initiate
and see.
Exactly, yeah. It might actually be one of his big, you know, sort of projects. We'll definitely have to see. But of course,
akatanga kukombedzera varimi atanga kuvaka ma hospital katinonetsa. And that's not me just finding
problems. You know what? The thing is, I think it might be in a quid pro quo type thing.
Yeah,
because
of course.
Because there's definitely something to gain from the white farmers that we had in Zimbabwe in terms of whether it's their access to markets that they had or in terms of skills. And it might be one of those, okay, we go so far and you help us in some sort of way. I don't think it's just a, okay, guys, come to Reserve Bank and we just pay you all the money that we owe. No. I think it's definitely one of those, well, this in exchange for that.
I also think that compensation is important in terms of reframing land reform. So the way it's been currently framed is in very racist terms, right? Black versus whites. They came and they kicked us off our land. Therefore, they must die and they must go. And it's not framed in terms of imbalances, structural imbalances within Zimbabwean society, which is the goal, which was the goal of the Chimrengas, and which is the goal of land reform. So, and, you know, for it to survive into the remainder of this century and to be a just cause, it does need to be reframed entirely. So compensation will go a long way towards that. I also think that compensation will contribute towards rebuilding confidence in the Zimbabwe, particularly in ZANU-PF, and the justness of ZANU's cause in its actions. So, yes, I do. I think that's a good idea, and let's see how far he gets in implementing it. Yeah. Hello?
Yeah,
we're just listening. We don't always have to interrupt.
I was shocked. that you didn't interrupt.
Wow.
One of the things that I found interesting was was his reference to working together and the unity. Of course, elections are happening next year. Definitely, those are on. He said so. But it was the aspect of, you know, he called on people to, across the political divide, to work together and whatever, however long till elections, there needs to be a unity of purpose, which I think is very important, and he spoke to that, and his speech was very inclusive. I don't think it was targeted at specific people. It was a speech for Zimbabweans, I think, and everyone can find something that they can relate to and feel part of whatever project is going to come out of, you know, the next 6 to 8 months.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly was very impressed in the speech as a whole, and he turned an absolute skeptic into a less skeptic. I'm not even skeptical. I'm very hopeful and very optimistic about his time and his term in office. And that's without qualification. I think if he is successful in his desires, you know, he struck a balance between local and international politics. That speech wasn't just for Zimbabweans. People need to realize that. And I was, even Nyayama election, I was happy about that. And I'm under no illusions that he's going to lose or that the opposition is going to win. But, you know, maybe a good drubbing will bring the oppositions to their senses and make them a better opposition, because as much as, you know, we're going to have, optimistically speaking, a loyal government, and I mean loyal to the Zimbabwean people, we also need to have a loyal opposition who hold them to account. Speaking Yakaipa, was good.
So speaking on the opposition, It will be interesting to see how they change. You know, a big part of their narrative for the long time has been Mugabe must go, and now Mugabe has gone. So how they reform their message, how they structure themselves going forward, and you know, there is a bit of an expectancy with Mnangagwa, and people are right now definitely. There's a more, okay, let's see what he's going to do. And I think for the opposition, it's quite a difficult position to be in, because you can't speak. I mean, you can speak on ZANU-PF's failures for the last 20 odd years or whatever, however long you want to go back. But you can't speak specifically on Mnangagwa in terms of his term in office, because it's just begun. So it's interesting. It will be interesting to see how they restructure, you know, and also calls for renewal as well within the opposition itself. And by opposition, I'm talking about MDC. So, you know,
I think we should actually have an opposition reaction episode as a standalone.
Yeah.
Right now, let's focus on our new president. quick thing. He spoke about a market economy, but also spoke about about command agriculture. I don't understand.
So, it's
because you can't command a market economy.
That's true, but I think with Command, I think it's a program that can easily move into the market economy, and really just, you know, letting the banks hand all over the financing. Sorry, so we've sort of lost Upenyu right now. She says something about her mic. So
I thought she said she'd reconnected.
Yeah, so, well, we still can't hear her. So she might just jump back in. But in terms of with Command, I think...
Can you hear me now?
Yes, yes. We can. Welcome back.
What? This time you move on. My God, I've been listening to you guys, and it's like, you know, having locked-in syndrome where everything is happening around you and you can see it, but you can't do anything?
Yeah.
That's how I felt. Especially when you're talking about the opposition, and then you said MDC, and I was triggered. It was...
Yeah, no, I'm so happy. Really, because it would still be on that.
I think that's why your silence.
You say, let's have a full episode on that.
On the opposition, yeah.
Okay, but I want to put in my two cents.
Yeah, by all means, go ahead. On,
which is that, because Chris, you said that the opposition cannot criticize Mnangagwa.
No,
and I
beg to
differ, because he's been head of government.
His term as president, so his presidency or his policies
There's no ground to criticize his term as president or even his policy, because they have not yet begun, or they have begun, but he hasn't done anything yet. But in terms of criticizing him, and in terms of criticizing ZANU-PF, I still think that this presents a major opportunity for the opposition to attack the cancer at its very, very root, which is ZANU-PF, and which is to talk about ZANU-PF's previous 37-year track record in government and its failure to move this country forward. In fact, we've moved back.
But here's the thing, Upenyu.
And if the opposition doesn't take advantage of...
If there is reform, right? If ZANU-PF actually reforms between now and elections, you lose that power every single day.
It's 9 months, Chris.
But it's 9 months, and we're
so for example, just a removal of the police from the roads. I mean, it's not.
They're back on the roads.
I don't know what the situation is, but
they're only off. I mean,
during that period, yeah. But the thing is, if there's actual reform in that sector, in the police sector, it will look like a big thing. It's the way things should be. But it will look like a big thing because of how it's been for the past thing. So I'm not saying they can't criticize, you know, ZANU-PF. They most certainly can, like I said, for the failures of the last however long you want to go back. But
37 years.
So, Upenyu, ZANU has now offered an alternative to their last 37 years.
Exactly.
MDC and the opposition need to do the same. And the criticisms are super valid. But they can now no longer just criticize. Personally, from the speeches I follow, Anaya Chamisa and Deb do tend to speak about the Zanuization of the state. They do tend to speak about ZANU as a system more than just Mugabe. I've always said this about how the opposition is reported on. But like I said, I genuinely believe this deserves its own episode.
I really want to get into it.
I really want to talk about those barking dogs.
I just want to put one last thing, and then we really can move on, and I promise I'll keep quiet. But it's also...
You can't say you promise to keep quiet. We're silencing women.
On this subject, I will keep quiet until the episode that we do on the opposition. But also in terms of just how Mnangagwa has even ascended to the position of president and first secretary of ZANU-PF, that in itself is a challenge to democracy. And if the opposition is really trying to pursue a democratic agenda, the very first thing that they should do is challenge the way the coup, not a coup, happened. Because let's be fair and let's be honest. There's nothing in our constitution, despite the legitimization of it, there's nothing in our constitution that enables the military to do that. So now we can move on.
The voice of people, of the people, is the voice of God. Not the constitution, the voice of the people.
You know,
that also is bullshit. Right now, as a savvy, if I was a opposition politician, I would not even be speaking about, you can't take away his legitimacy. There were 60,000 people. Even Morgan was there. How can you argue it wasn't legitimate?
But that's what I'm saying. No, why was he there? No, why were but you the legitimizing
thing is,
that?
No, but the thing is, to be fair, is people wanted, you can't dispute the fact that people wanted Mugabe gone.
Yes.
How it happened?
But let him go in a democratic manner. Let him go in an election.
But how long? But how long?
No,
but the thing is, how long do people, you know, what then happens? How long do people go on and continue suffering whilst we wait for elections? I completely understand the narrative of what you're putting across, but at the end of the day, it's one of those situations where people still wanted him gone, and it was across the politics. It was just specifically people wanted Mugabe gone, and now for ZANU-PF though. You know, we're speaking, this is an opportunity for them to reform. And
yes, but how you begin is how you will end. Because the concern here isn't, Kuti, there's a new guy in charge, or, you know, it's actually essentially the same old house with a fresh coat of paint. My problem is, when the 10 years have passed and Mnangagwa has
really dusted the corners and
they sprayed some
I think
the Mugabe, house is the same.
No, fair enough, but I think Mugabe not being in charge is a huge thing. We cannot you cannot undermine it as a fresh coat of paint type thing. I get ZANU is still
no, I get in the first place.
No, the last 37 years. I mean, fair enough. The last maybe 2 years or so,
and
but we can't
again,
discredit.
Can we come
we
back
can't
to
discredit.
You sound like Odenge, who was saying Grace Mugabe. Excuse me. Those are grown men. You're telling me Obed Mpofu is going to change because Mugabe is not there.
No, I'm not saying that Obed Mpofu is going to change because Mugabe is not there. But I'm saying you can't neglect the impact that Mugabe had, number one, on Zimbabwe, but also on ZANU-PF itself. I don't think that can be understated, and I think to a degree you guys are kind of understating what the person of Mugabe or the persona of Mugabe actually, how serious that was in terms of influence, in terms of the things. I mean, Grace Mugabe went on a whole tirade, and she did so using the fact that she was... Pardon?
So, Chris,
yeah.
My point is, or even, I don't know, I'm not going to speak for Peng. The point is, it's not about Mugabe. It's the people in ZANU are easily or can be controlled like that. So it's, if Emerson wanted, he could create his own dynasty the same way.
I don't think
the
so.
The same way,
Obsidia
is already a member of parliament. There'll be no problem with her. And in fact, at least she's better. She's an MP. There'll be, if she decides that she wants to be vice president in the next 3 years,
I don't think so.
They'll be saying,
"Pamberina
Mai."
No,
again.
Okay, fair enough. I mean, they've set a precedence for themselves. But I think that, number one, like I said, there's an opportunity for ZANU-PF to reform. Whether they'll do so, I don't know. But I think they themselves are going to be forced to change. And one of the things that I've seen is that there's no more one center of power. They've come out and said that explicitly. But there's also going to be a national chairperson of ZANU-PF who's going to be, you know, someone different. So I think they, of course, based on their history, you know, we can judge them. But I do think just the person of Mugabe cannot be understated, or his role and his influence. And we can even look to the way this coup, not a coup, happened. There was so much respect and, you know, reverence for the man. Even ED himself in his speech, the inauguration speech, came out and said, you know, there's still so much respect there. And one of the things that they're going to do is try to, reconstruct his legacy now that he's not in government and now that he's gone out so ingloriously. They're definitely going to work on that. So I get where everyone's coming from, but I don't think it just on Mugabe itself, I don't think it should be understated how much of an impact he had on the state and on ZANU. But we've digressed so far from the
Let's
speech.
Come back. We'll talk about this. In
yeah, we're talking
episode.
About the market economy and command agriculture. I think it's something that can be moved straight from the government in back into the market, because really, at the, essentially, what it is providing people with resources so that they can farm. And all it is working.
You're telling them what to farm.
Yeah, no, but the thing is, that's what banks used to do anyway. Mm-hmm. So the bank used to give you a loan and say, we're giving you a loan because you're going to be doing tobacco and the market for tobacco is this, and this is how much at the end of the day you're going to pay us back. So it really just, the aspect goes back to, you know, he spoke about
tobacco this. Makes a profit. Maize is actually, Command is running at a loss.
No,
the market price, the GM price for grain is less than the market price. It's not a system that can easily be accepted into a capitalist system because it doesn't work.
No,
how can GM be paying less than market price to a farmer?
Of course,
but that speaks more to the
so
system.
My,
than
but
it
how does
it
turn? How is it? How do you suggest a bank provides inputs to a farmer to farm maize and then buys that like?
But the thing is, I don't think it will necessarily be maize, because
yeah, I don't know.
Right now, in terms of the government policy, it was maize, and I think that was just an easier way for them to go.
No, it's about feeding the country because consistently,
food security,
2.2 million people, over 2 million people are in danger of starvation in this country every year. So the rationale of farming maize is a sound rationale. We need to be able to feed ourselves before we can, quote unquote, become the breadbasket of Africa, which, by the way, was never true at any point in our history. But the whole point of command agriculture is then to be able to say, okay, now that everybody has food in their belly, let's now move on to the things that we can then do. Does that make sense? The tobaccos and the mangoes and the oranges that people are crying for. Let's now move on to that. But first, you have to feed yourself.
And the market for food, I think, will always be there. So there's definitely somebody who's going to pay for someone to grow maize.
Chris, did you just say you think there'll be a market for food always?
No, I said the market for food.
Do you envision a future where people have stopped eating?
That's what I'm saying. I said the market for food will always be there, so there's definitely someone going to pay for it. So it can.
I accept your points.
Yeah.
I accept your points.
So with commands, I mean, it's something that what I hope is that the government releases the economy from its grips. I mean, we can't have a situation where they are. As someone always used to say, I think it's Kosana to quote him, they can't be referee and player. So they definitely needs to be a lot of reform in that sector. And he spoke about the banks specifically and the fact that banks need to go back to banking and they need to, you know, start making money off giving people loans and stuff like that rather than making money off bank charges. And that's serious. Mm-hmm. It's very important. For me, one of the biggest things was the civil service, and I hope this is something that actually, you know, really they actually enforce and they are very serious about it. And I hope Mariawanda Nzua, the PermSec, was listening, because aside from the numbers, and you know, he said that we can't have absenteeism. Aside from the numbers, which definitely need to be
cut,
yeah, there needs to be a lot of
rationalized is the nice word for that.
there needs to be streamlining. Ikoko, people also just need to do work, and when people are not doing work, they need to be let off. I do hope there is serious action in the civil service. and we actually see a government. And he spoke about, you know, just people needing their needs, their services need to be attended to, and people, it sounded, you know, like people shouldn't, there shouldn't be delays, because they, at the end of the day, they are customers. We are customers. Every time you go to the passport office, or every time you go to a government building needing something, you are a customer, and the customer must be treated as such, not treated as, you know, someone arukukunetsa. We don't want that, and I hope that's something that they do change.
Well, it's not simply, I mean, customer service is, of course, very at the very top of the list, but it's also issues like e-government. So why do you have to go to the office and wait for the person to show up to work to give you the form when you should be able to download it or even submit it online? Mm-hmm. So there have been efforts, you know, there's something called Zim Connect, for instance, where you can apply for some government services online, but things like company registration. And you can even apply for an A1 or A2 farm for those of you who are listening who want to be farmers and apply for command. But the level of professionalism within the civil service is something that definitely needs to be looked at. And then also bringing the government into the 21st century, because it does, you know, every time I've interfaced with government, it seems like a very 19th century system. You must go to see Ningi, to Ningi and Ningi to get a piece of paper signed and stamped and then return back to wherever. And so those are the inefficiencies and the issues that are currently plaguing the civil service, besides the, you know, the big overarching ones, which I hope that, I mean, 9 months is not long enough to be able to deal with that, but it is long enough to start putting the civil service on a path towards reform, towards rationalization, and towards efficiency.
Yeah, it simply can't be run on patronage anymore. Most of these offices are generally inefficient, because you need to have inefficient systems to create jobs for your patronage network.
So, yeah.
Patronage network.
Patriotism network.
Patriotism network. Sorry, guys, it's been a long emotional week. But Cisco is...
Yeah,
doing the thong song, Jerry.
Just before we get into that, I was going to say that a true tell of how serious ED is going to be will probably be tomorrow. So we're recording on Sunday. But when cabinet is announced, we will definitely see, you know, how serious he intends to be. Of course, I don't expect there to be massive changes. You'll definitely get people like Obit still in government, but you know, certain people in key positions will give us an indication at least how the next 9 months will go and how serious he's going to be. Of interest for me, finance, what happens there. We were supposed to get the budget this past week, but of course with events happening, you know, that didn't come through. So I'm sure the PS, the PermSec, has been preparing that, so whoever becomes finance minister will really just come out and read it. But it'll be interesting to see who gets into cabinet, and I think next week we'll probably speak on that on the podcast.
Yeah, if there's any true surprises, we might bring out a supplementary episode, but... I don't. Selling yeah, dreams. Don't expect any surprises.
Yeah.
I don't know. People have this thing. They're thinking that there'll be opposition members in there. Besides maybe ex-Sapu and ex-Sanu members who are now opposition, I doubt it altogether.
Yeah.
We need to have that opposition episode. We just do. We need to talk about.
yeah. So your homie's locked up. I'm locked up.
Don't let me out.
Chikrubi.
You guys are fired from my song, my group. You're all of you. You're off key. You're out of tune. You're just bad.
What happened with my locked up? My locked up was on point. Wow.
So you're saying locked up?
Yeah, I'm locked up. They won't let me out.
We're singing different songs. Yeah, I know. Sister, I would jibuluga uchikuru bigo.
Yeah, so as you...
But why was there no process followed? I mean,
as you might know, we spoke about this...
We should have heard this attack.
So we spoke about this last time that Minister Chombo, ex-Minister Chombo, had been detained. And yesterday there were pictures of him in court. There was actually a video of him climbing into the police vehicle after court. And of course, it's very interesting. I wonder how, you know, that case is going to go down. But also, he was detained by the military, and I understand he was... On the Friday, maybe, he was released, sent home, and then the police came and arrested him. I really don't know. Maybe you guys would know, like, what the legal situation
well,
is.
Well, listen, there. The military can't court-martial a civilian. That's just the end of
it. Yeah, but they released him.
You
he's
know,
now
the military
court,
has no arresting powers. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's now in court, but it was wrong for the military to even state that we can arrest civilians. So,
but was he arrested again, or was he just? I mean, okay, it's an arrest. Yeah, so.
I heard he was beaten up by the military.
Yeah, they were.
And that seems more like my personal than it is about. Yeah, justice.
No, there's definitely that. So there's.
Who did he piss off? Is the question.
That much.
No, I mean, of all, like, look. What happened to him is wrong. There's absolutely no doubt about it. Same with what's happened to, you know, the looting of Jonathan Moyo and Xavier Kasukwere's house post them leaving the country or where they are right now, with allegedly military people going back to their homes and ransacking them for a second time. Even their arrests of, it was extrajudicial. So jokes aside, it is probably the darkest stain on ED's ascendancy to power. And it's one of those things that one can never escape is, with all of this optimism and everything that's going on, is that there's a very, very, very dark side to this regime. Mm. And, Chombo had no reason to be under military arrests. I don't know if he posed an actual threat to the military.
So, I mean, of course, I generally don't know, but we must also, I mean, they came in and said this was a military intervention. The legalese of that is, so, you know, in not calling it a coup, we must also understand, I mean, it was a coup that's not a coup, but there was the element of it being a coup, and they really did take over certain state functions, or they went above the constitution or the law. I don't know. I don't want to, you know, speak. I'm speaking from a layman's perspective here. But so there are certain things there that definitely can be brought into question, and maybe our courts will deal with them. Who Chombo pissed off? I have no idea. I didn't even know he was part of G40 like that. You know what I mean?
Sorry, before you go on yeah. You asked about the legalese. There's an argument to be made about Section 213 of the Constitution, which says, with the authority of the president, the defense forces may be deployed in Zimbabwe, A, in defense of Zimbabwe, and B, in support of the police service in the maintenance of public order, or in support of the police service and other civilian authorities in the event of an emergency or disaster. So, you know, first thing
but
it says
the authority
with
of
authority
the
of the president.
Granted.
Yeah, I mean,
There was no presidential authority. They suspended the authority.
Well,
of the president.
If we go back to Mugabe's speech on Sunday,
he said that this was necessary.
Exactly.
He didn't say we planned it together. He didn't.
But he
say
gave,
I wrote it. There's documents.
The only person who gave consent that he was in contact with the military during their time was the current president. So
who was so not
was
the president at the time?
He was in authority to be allowing the military to exercise.
I mean, yeah,
you know what? I think this will be an interesting case study for
indeed,
law students
indeed,
for
and,
many, many years to come.
And my,
because does legitimization after the fact make the act a legal act? Does it grant constitutionalism, you know, post after the fact? Does people marching in support of something that is illegal, does that make it a legal act in terms of, you know, constitutionalism, and particularly in terms of our situation? Because, you know, I keep coming back to this. Our supreme law in this country is the Constitution. And if we, in changing our president, are not observant of what the supreme law is, that poses a very serious problem for me as a human being and a very serious problem for the democratization project. So, you know, again, alternatives exist. Maybe that's what we need to think about.
Hallelujah.
Yeah. So...
No. There's nothing to add there.
Yeah, no. Yeah. I was going to move straight on to just wrapping up the Chombo issue. A lot of people seem to be quite joyed online, but for me, I feel definitely due process needs to be followed. We can't, regardless of the fact that, you know, they or the regime he was part of did so many heinous things to a lot of people. And a lot of people didn't get the justice or a chance at justice that they deserved. I still think that, you know, we must allow him to sit before the courts and his case to be tried. He is corrupt, that's without a doubt. So I don't think they'll have a hard time of sticking whatever they want to in terms of corruption to him. Chipanga's also in court, him and Hamandishe.
And we have no time for 9 inches.
Yeah, that one. I mean, poor Pangi. Like, <it's, laughs> I mean, we spoke about the juicy, did we?
We spoke about the juice. The most significant thing he's done in his life to this far
is wear that jersey.
Does anyone have an online link to where I can purchase one?
An Apollo juice. You want to buy an Apollo juice?
So I'm about to get my one that madam. I'm going to figure juice.
Ah, shame. Anyway, yeah, we've been running for longer than expected, but it has been a momentous occasion, and quite one to unpack. We will get to the opposition at some point, because clearly there's a lot to be said there. And when we get a cabinet as well, we'll speak on that. I think that's the most important thing, more than the speeches that were given. I do hope that his speech writers can play to whatever strengths that he does have. He's no orator, but
I'm available for speech writing services.
And to be fair, I mean, if
more less speeches and more action. If he never gives another speech again, but gets things done, hallelujah.
Yeah, that's also true. But also,
you can come and fart on the mic for all I care, as long as things are working.
He's a lot more comfortable. If you guys want to see this, he's a lot more comfortable in Shona. So there was the speech that he read after he was accused of being Lacoste or whatever, and he had to say I'm not. He presented two versions of that speech, and they're both on YouTube, one in English and one in Shona. And the one in Shona he's a lot more comfortable in Shona. But yeah, we, whoever the speech writers happen to be, whatever happens, they really should, you know, just try play to his strengths. Yeah, I think that's okay. You can find me at, yeah.
I think
some kind of CV for a podcast.
Hey, you never know, there's jobs out there, guys.
About his t-shirt, Chris, what kind of CV?
You know what I mean? So wrapping up, you can find me at Chris Charamba on all social media. Follow our Politics and Beyond page and also our Poly at Beyond ZW on Twitter.
Please tweet us. We like to hear from you about you. Tell us what you think. Do you think it was, you know, was this good for you? And what are you hoping from the new Zimbabwe? I'm Upenyu Makoni everywhere. No H, please. It's not Upenyu, it's Upenyu.
And I am Henry Constantino Piti. Have a good bye. And now.
Capital 263.